Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey towards truth, traveling through our dreams and an inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All Roads Lead 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. Established in 2011, my focus is my mission statement: to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring jewels to become leaders by establishing partnerships with entrepreneurs, corporations, donors, sponsors, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Please join me every other Tuesday at noon on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max, and new and improved website coming out 2026, allroads65max.org. My special guest today is Mr. Rusty Austin, who has a warm, engaging presence and plenty of stories to share about his time in Hollywood that we're going to be discussing. What inspired him to shift into children's literature, and why empowering young creators matters now more than ever. He's great on air and brings a mix of entertainment industry insight, inspiring personal stories, and meaningful conversation for families, listeners of all ages. At last, I want to say thank you for this interview chance, Mr. Austin, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
You're so welcome. So yes, so how are you doing over there?
Well, the weather here has been wonderful. High of 86 yesterday, 80 today, so we're happy in Southern California.
Oh, I need to be over there where you are. I know we're like the below 50s, like in the 40s. It's freezing over here. I thought yesterday it was going to rain, but it didn't.
Yeah. We're going up to the Bay Area this weekend, up to San Francisco, and I hear it's been raining up there. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? To be honest with you, San Francisco normally is cold, no matter what. But it's been cold over here in the valley and kind of warm, I can say. And I don't like the cold.
Yeah.
But San Francisco, I was there yesterday and the day before, and it's some pretty good weather. So
good.
Maybe in luck.
Looking forward to it. I know. Just a brief. Mark Twain said the coldest winter I ever spent was summer in San Francisco.
That's right. I am heading somewhere where it's warm, hot. I like the heat.
Yeah, you'd like
not
it here.
Not the
then.
Cold.
Yeah, you'd like it here.
Yes. Well, I have been doing research about you, and I come to find you're such an inspiring man.
Okay.
I have a lot of questions, so I am going to get right to it. But first, tell me about your journey in Hollywood as a producer, and what impact did it have on your career?
Well, I was a roofer in Denver for many years after high school, like 7 years. And then one day I realized that roofing is hot, dirty, nasty work. And so I went back to a community college for a couple of years and then applied to film schools and got in at UCLA. And that was probably 35, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then right when I got out of UCLA, the whole reality television thing was just starting up. So I just kind of rolled that wave all the way through to the end of my career.
Wow. Yeah, so did you really have, you know, we hear about Hollywood and some of the dark side of Hollywood, but what is your perspective, if you don't mind me asking, about
Hollywood
and entertainment?
It's up and down. I mean, I've had good experiences and bad experiences, but overall, I can't complain. I mean, it's been a wonderful career. Even though reality is kind of I don't know, a lot of people just don't like it. They would rather have scripted, but it's like, because I graduated just when it was coming into fruition, I ended up spending my career in reality, and it was fine.
Yes. So, we all have, like, I am a mentor and I mentor girls from 14 to 25 years old. I help build and teach customer service skills.
Okay.
And my focus are girls in all areas of who has faced challenges and obstacles. And what people fail to realize is that customer service skills is what we all
Yes.
have to acknowledge of how we communicate, how we react, and everything. So I
Yes.
really try to advocate about resting within. And what I mean by that is before we jump to conclusions, we first need to listen and then understand how we need to react
Yes.
to the situation. So tell me, in your opinion, why empowering young creators matters now more than ever?
Because they are the future and I am the past, and I want to help them get move forward and get their careers. And just a brief aside about my collegiate career, what I found out was that all these four-year schools, UCLA, USC, all of them, Berkeley, they lose half their students by junior year. And so if you go to community college and get good grades, they are just dying for people, warm bodies to come in and fill those slots. And so as long as you get good grades, you can go to community college for a couple of years. It's way, way cheaper. And then just transfer in and still get that 4-year degree.
Wow. Okay. What in your opinion, what do you do or call encouragement building artists and poets to develop their talents?
Well, I'll just back up for just a second and talk about this book, An Awesome Bird, The Pelican. What happened was I was on a website called Donors Choose, which is like a GoFundMe for teachers. And I read about a teacher that wanted to buy poetry books for her class. They were middle schoolers, sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. And so I contacted her and said, I'd love to come in and read one of my books. And so she had me come in and I read the book, and the kids were just so into it. I was surprised because I figured, they'd be fidgety or bored or whatever, but no. They hung on every word. So that inspired me to ask her, look, why don't we have the kids in your class illustrate my next book? And she loved that idea. So every Friday afternoon she would give them an hour or two, and they did a whole whiteboard graph of which kids were doing which animals. And 4 to 6 months went by, and she came back with 120 drawings, and I had to choose 40 of them for the poems. But because I didn't want any of the kids to get left out, I made sure to put a section in the book of all the pictures that were done. And one of the kids, her name was Miranda. This is just a kind of speaks to what you were talking about. Her name was Miranda. And the teacher, who's Leslie Snyder, told me that before Miranda did the book, she was very introverted and shy and withdrawn. And after I came in and worked with her and did it, because I chose several of her drawings, not just one. And she said Miranda was just completely opened up and was extroverted and not shy anymore. So I feel really good about that.
I come to find also, when we work with students, and for students who are shy or who are a little conservative, whom have experienced some form of trauma, so
Yes.
they're a little closed up. When you give them projects, and you give them projects where they can be creative, a little bit imaginatory, you'd be surprised what you come out with.
Oh, it's amazing what they open up with. And speaking to that, I would just say that watching these kids just open up and develop and do their own thing, it was just so satisfying to me to see this whole process play out. It was great.
So what happened after that? So you created the
Yes.
book?
I created the book. I think I wrote 44 poems for it, but like I said, I had over 100 drawings, so I had to kind of pick and choose the drawings for the poems. But then at the end of the book, I just have a whole section of pictures for the kids. There's like 40 pictures, so that every kid that did a picture, no matter how good or not so good it was, I won't say bad because they're all very enjoyable, they got in the book. And then I had to make a deal with the Palm Springs lawyers, the Palm Springs School District lawyers.
Right.
I couldn't do contracts with them. So I ended up giving each kid $20, a book, and a bag of chips.
Wow.
And they were ecstatic about that too. That was fun.
Yeah, because that was my next question is, how did you develop your characters and where they're centered into your children's books? How did you do that? Did you go out with creative minds or something that you had created?
Well, just to back up a bit, I grew up in Colorado, and a lot of the lifestyle there is like outdoors on weekends. And so a lot of that lifestyle is also animals. You know, you get to know the animals and appreciate them. And so long about 2014, 2015, there was a book on Facebook called Go the F to Sleep that turned out into like one of the first viral sensation books. And so I started writing these short little poems and putting them up on Facebook. And a couple of years go by and my friends all told me, you know, you should put them in a book. And so since then I've written 5 books.
Yes, I did notice that. In regards to that, what made you just totally leave Hollywood when you're doing so well and you just decided to start writing your, tell me about this memoir. You started off right with the memoir, right?
Yes, I wrote a memoir about growing up in the 70s and 80s when my good friend Dave passed away at a fairly young age. I think he was 62. And I wanted to kind of memorialize our relationship that we had over all the last 40 years. And so I put it in a book. I went through my photo archives and took out a bunch of pictures and scanned them, because a lot of those pictures, you know, were taken on film cameras, not with digital like you have now. You can take 1,000 pictures and choose one good one, but you had to get like 24 to 36 pictures, and then it was $10 for the album. So you had to be a lot more careful about what you took pictures of.
Right.
And so I got a lot of those pictures and put those in the book, and they're all just like little short vignettes of adventures that Dave and I had. And I think I threw a couple of poems and some other stuff in there too. Dave's dad was a used car dealer. And so one thing we did a lot when we were 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, we went through used cars just like matchsticks. We would drive them for 4 to 6 months, break them down and get another one from his dad for, you know, a couple $100. And so I ended up having over 40 cars in my life. I tried to write about each one. I know I missed some, but I got most of them.
Wow. Yeah. And I know we're going to be discussing, I mean, because you have so many books, but I was really intrigued with this one. So tell me about your newest book, An Awesome Bird, The Pelican.
Yeah, that's
the middle. That was the one you were talking about, the middle school students, huh?
Yes. And that's like the fourth book in a series that I've written, Goofy Things by Rusty. And the way I get my animal poems is I get them from the internet or from out driving around. If I see something that's interesting, I'll file it away in my head. If I write a poem while I'm driving, I have to write it down as soon as I can or I'll forget it. And the other thing I do with the animal poems is I like to keep them all to about 12 to 15 words and 3 to 4 to 5 lines. And it's a lot like my career in reality television, because in reality television, what you do is you shoot first and then edit the show. Whereas in scripted, you write it first and then shoot it. So what I do with my poems is I'll start a little bit longer and then I'll hone them down and hone them down and hone them down and try to get to the very essence of what makes the animal eat or where it lives or how it sleeps or like that, to make it interesting for the kids to have something that they would be curious about.
Okay. How is your storytelling ability that have, you know, it's stated that it has shaped by working on unscripted reality shows?
Yes, exactly. And that's, like I say, that's the whole process of just honing it down and honing it down. Like in my memoir, those are all just short stories. I don't do long form very well at all. I like to really find, you know, the kernel, the essence of what it is, and try to get that on paper. So that's right. Kind of how that affects my writing.
So getting back to the book, The Awesome Bird, the Pelican. Tell me a little bit more about that book, because the reason why I'm asking you about that book is that would be something that I would share.
Yes. It's a lot like I said, it's the fourth in the series of Goofy Things by Rusty. And just to kind of give you my style, I have one called about a caiman, which is a small alligator. Okay. And it says, the caiman has a membrane that nictitates to better underwater singer dates. Well, first of all, kids are going to be curious, what's a caiman? And secondly, what's a nictitating membrane, which is the membrane that covers their eye when they're underwater so they don't get water in the eye. And I would hope that a kid would look at that and say, what's a nictitating membrane, and look it up and figure it out. And also, nictitating is just kind of a fun word to say, so nictitating.
So is it, you know, it's published, it's out there, and where did you put it in schools? Or?
Yes, I do readings at local schools. I've done, I don't know, 8 or 10 this year. What is this, December? Yeah, I probably do about one every 3 to 4 weeks. It's mostly aimed at kids from like 3 to 10. Although, okay, you know, the middle schoolers, the 11 and 12, 13 year olds seem to really like it too. So I don't know. It's kind of got a universal appeal. And the other thing about it is that it's not linear. You can open it up to any page or any picture and just read one poem and be happy. And speaking along those lines of what you were talking about earlier, all my books have a do-it-yourself section at the end, which gives like a page for them to draw their own animal and write their own poem. And I give them the prompts. Like in this book, I have rhinoceros, tarantula, ladybug. So that gives them something that some kind of a starting point.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. It makes it very interesting.
Yes.
And as they read the book, they can also even tell their parents about what they read and
yes,
come up with their own creativeness. Very good.
And I found that I get a lot of positive feedback from parents just because it's so easy to read. They can do a bedtime story and they don't have to concentrate page one, page two, page three, page four. They can just open it up and read a few poems and be done with it.
Yeah.
If you're a parent, you know how hard it is to keep those kids entertained at night and get them to go to bed. I'm a grandparent now, but I did have kids, yeah.
So you really are passionate about,
yes,
the knowledge and working with,
yes,
children in the mid-teens, I would say.
Yeah, and one thing I found about these kids is they don't realize yet, because most of them have come from like, this is a fairly affluent area, but we do have some inner city stuff. And a lot of the schools I work with, the kids are considered low income or inner city. And they just don't realize there's people out there that care about them other than just their teachers or their schools or their parents. And it's fun for me to just get in their class and say, yeah, I'm an adult and I care about what you guys do and I want you to do well. It's not just all negative. You try to get some positive stuff into those kids.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree, because in today's world, we're dealing with so much that's going on. And I believe, like, I tell my students all the time, try not to grow up so fast, you know?
Oh, that is so true.
Huh?
I said that is so true. And the world the way it is just pushes you to go faster and faster and faster every day, every day, every day. And I try to tell them, look, you know, it's I think there was a song called The Circle Game about growing up, and it said, don't go so fast, because the day will come when you drag your feet just to slow the circle down. And that's so true.
It is. It's so true. So and I'm hoping that it you know, more of us really advocate that to our children so they can,
yes,
understand, you know, when you're 9, be 9. Because when I talk to my girls, I'm like, I was playing with dolls at age 12.
I know, it's just such a problem. My grandson is now 13, but he literally learned how to use his phone while he was learning to talk. So he's had a screen and the internet his whole life, which I'm not against it, but it's just so much thrown at kids now that we didn't have. You know, when we were kids, we had to go outside and play. We couldn't just watch a screen for 3 hours. We had to find something to do on our own. And I'm,
yeah,
not saying that's any better or worse, but it's definitely something I like to be aware of.
Well, I think it made us a little bit more aware.
Yes.
And taught us how to be responsible as we were getting older versus,
well, yeah,
you know, versus, and especially girls, I was just talking to a college student yesterday, and she was saying she was so happy about the vacation that's going, so she wanted to be with her family and everything. And she was really upset about her test, because they have finals right now.
Yes, finals week,
And
yeah.
yeah. And she was saying where, a lot of students were crying. And we were just chatting, and she was like, I was looking at everybody and was like, aren't we college students? But it's the point of feeling that. You know what
Yes.
I mean?
I try to tell, I actually am involved with kids that are 18, 19, 20, getting ready to go to college, and I try to tell them, look, this is only 4 years out of a long, long life. And there's no reason to get down if you mess up an exam. You can always go back because you're going to have many, many, many years ahead of you where you're not in college and not in school. And it, just a brief thing about school is I'm 67, so I've been retired for 8 or 9 years. And recently I went back to school to take a Spanish class with, college age kids. That was so much fun to be back in school, going up the stairs, the bathroom and the all. It's just those little things that you just take for granted that you don't realize you miss after so many years.
So true. Absolutely. That is true. Mr. Austin, I was inspired reading about how great you are on air and how you bring mix of entertainment industry insight, inspiring personal stories, as I stated earlier, and meaningful conversations for families and listeners of all ages. And I looked at that and I said to myself, what an inspiring story that you have,
Yes.
because you went from Hollywood fast life to really engaging with children and
Yes.
everything. What kind of kudos do you give yourself for such?
Well, I had a great career, went on for 40 years, and I was just talking to a guy last week about it, and we had the shows we do, you work on them for 6 to 8 months, and it just wears you down so much that I would sleep for 2 weeks after every show. And nowadays, I get up if I feel like working for a couple 3 hours. I do. If I don't feel like working, I just go outside and meditate on the lemon blossoms in my backyard. So I've definitely rewarded myself after all those years of hard work. And another thing I always tell kids is that it's important just to stay busy. If you just stay at home on the couch, you're going to get depressed.
Right.
And that doesn't help you. It doesn't help anybody. You need to get out in the world and make your way. And another thing is, I actually dropped out of high school and went back to community colleges. So it's possible to, there's so many different ways to make it. I wouldn't encourage anybody to drop out of high school, but it worked for me.
Right. Nothing is impossible.
That's right.
Nothing is,
I think it
because
was Henry Ford said, think you can, think you can't. Either way, you're right.
yeah, either
And I've
way
kind of
you're
followed
right.
that my whole life.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree to that. You said there's an array of animals perfect for child development learning. Tell me about your insight and your opinion regards to the child development learning. I like that. I thought
Yes.
that was a key point there. Tell me
My
about that.
first book, Beware the Grizzly Bear, was mostly like cows and bears and horses and rats and things that kids would know about. But then when I got going on it, like in my last book, I did a poem about a Uromastix, which is an Egyptian lizard. And it goes, the Egyptian Uromastix is cold-blooded true, but he's enthusiastic about meeting me. And, so I made up the word enthusiastic just so I could rhyme it. But like I said, a lot of kids, they probably don't even know what a Uromastix, never even heard of it. So I get that to them. And then another one I'll just read really briefly is called Paedophryne amuensis, which is a frog that's smaller than your thumbnail. And the poem was, Paedophryne amuensis is hard to rhyme. It's just a tiny frog with a name sublime. So I'm hoping, Paedophryne amuensis might be fun for a kid to say or tell his friend about.
Right. What was it like to work on top-rated reality TV shows Like the Hell's Kitchen. I love
Yes.
that. I love that reality show.
I actually that
Survivor.
was how I ended my career. I did 16 seasons of Hell's Kitchen. So much fun. I was a post producer, so I was around while we were shooting and it kind of helped out, but mostly I would just collect the tapes, and then I started out with tape, and then we graduated to discs, and then finally at the end of my career everything was on a hard drive. So, but when we started out with tapes, we would shoot at a 400-to-1 ratio, so I'd have 400 hours of tape for 1 hour on TV. And so what you would do is you would hone it. That's why it would always take 6 to 8 months, because you would hone it down and hone it down and hone it down and just try to find, you had to watch all the stuff over and over and just try to find the very, very essence. That's what I try to do with my poems too.
Okay. And what about Big Brother?
Big Brother was mostly live. So what we did as a post producer, we would edit it, but you get 1 day to edit, or 2 days, or 3 days maybe. You try to, when you cast it, you want to make sure you cast people that are going to be excited and interesting and angry and sad and fun all at the same time. So you have a lot to work with. If you just hire boring people, you're going to have not have much of a show. So we look for that kind of animation when we interview them for the show. We want to make sure they're
And
animated is really the best way to put it. You want to make sure that they're excited and ready to go, and not slower, or whatever you want to put it. Yeah.
now I thought this was very interesting about cops.
Yeah. That was really the first. There was other shows that did, like, I think there's one called Video 101 or something that did that kind of stuff, but Cops was really the first kind of reality show that would follow somebody in their job from day to day. And I'll tell you about Cops, you get 24 hours of nothing and then you get 15 minutes of fame. So
Right.
it's a lot, it's a lot of sitting around doing nothing. But like I said, we only show you the parts where it's exciting. So you don't see all the mundane stuff that goes on all day, every day, every week, every month. We'll shoot, 14 hours and we'll show you 10 minutes. So,
But last but least, what about Nanny 911?
oh, that was such a fun show to do. And the funny thing about Nanny 911 is we shot this whole thing in England about the mansion and the nannies and Nanny Central, and none of it worked. So we just threw the whole thing out. I don't know how many millions of dollars it cost. And then we just had the nannies. They would get a quick, like a 3 to 5 minute tape of the family that they're going to see, which we would edit for them, show it to them, and then they would just show up at the house on the appointed day, and they would have a plan in place just from watching the stuff that we would show them. But again, they had to we give them a week to go there to fix things, which is, not enough time really to fix anything, but it makes for a good TV show.
Right. So are you still involved with any of the reality shows or
No, I cut that line completely, and
did
now I
you?
just do the writing,
Oh, just the writing.
and take my dog for a walk every day, obviously.
So tell me about your other books.
I like I said, I did Beware the Grizzly Bear was my first book, and it was a poetry book that my nephew illustrated with his Commodore 64, I think you call it, that he had left over from when he was little. It's like a really, really old computer, and it turned out pretty nice, actually. And then I did a book about food called The Carrot Is Orange, which he did this illustration for. I'll just read you a quick one out of that. Give me a glazed donut any day. In fact, I'll take two and be on my way. So
That's
I wrote
an
poems for
ice
kids,
dribble.
food that kids like. And then I did The Unicorn Has One Horn, which is, the unicorn has one horn. They say she can fly, but I've never seen one up in the sky. But
Okay.
mostly I haven't done, I don't know if I've done any other fictional animals. Mostly I just do animals that are actually out there, because there's probably 20,000 species of animals. And I have a whole file in my computer of hundreds of poems that I've already written that are just waiting to get put in a book. So, but I still find stuff on the internet that I like. Like, for example, just the other day I was reading a story about a thing called a Red Shank Duck, Douc, which is a small monkey that lives in, I think, in Madagascar, the Red Shank Duck. And so I've been playing around with that for a week trying to figure out how to rhyme that. but they have a very expressive red face, and their shanks, which is the back of their legs, are red. So that's why they call it a red shank duke.
Wow. I like the way that when you write your memoirs or your books, and how we go out for the little research, because you know we have to get the good and the bad with it. Oh, is this good or is this not good? And I was reading, you had sent a book to your sister.
Yes.
For your grandkids. She reported back and said that they loved it.
Yes.
The do-it-yourself section, which you spoke about earlier, that section was especially fun for them. Each child got a full page to color and draw, and to be included in the book, just like the big kids from middle school.
They love it.
Signed their artwork, which I found to be very interesting. And the book itself, 5-star Amazon review for an awesome bird, the pelican. I always ask everyone, because when we write our books and someone picks it up to make it shine, how did that make you feel at that time?
Oh, it feels so wonderful. In fact, a short story about my sister's kids. I ended up sending them 2 copies because they filled up the 1 copy. So I sent them another one. But yeah, I love that kind of stuff. And I my favorite part about doing readings is going into these schools and just reading to the kids in their classes, because like I said, I would have thought they would be fidgety and bored and not interested, but they're just so wrapped, really. I don't know any other way to put it. They pay very close attention. And I don't know if that's the animals or my reading style or what, but it makes me feel really good. Yeah.
So your books are very colorful. Do you have a copy of the book to show?
Sure. This is some of the stuff in the Pelican book. See if I can find the toucan. Here we go. So this is the picture of the toucan singing. And then the kids loved all the toucans. And so what they did was, this is all every kid that did a toucan, I made them their own little section. Yeah. And the other one that they were really, really big on was called an axolotl. And here's the one I chose for the axolotl.
Okay.
Hard to rhyme. The poem goes, "The axolotl can regrow his brain, which is a handy thing for an axolotl." I worked on that. I could not find a rhyme for axolotl, so that's what I ended up with. And then if you look in the end of the book, you can see there's so many axolotls. All the kids love the axolotl. So
yeah.
And, like I said, at the end of the book, I just put a whole section of every kid that actually did a picture got in the book. So.
Okay.
And then this is the grizzly bear book, which was the first one that I wrote.
That's nice. I like that.
And then you can see these are the pictures that my nephew did on the Commodore 64.
Now, is that on the second page? What, was that an animal on the second page?
Well, he did all these animals, and so I kind of put them in the front there. And then
okay.
And then let's see if I can find the page again. Right. This is the gorilla beating his chest.
Okay.
And this would be the hammerhead shark.
Yep.
So we did all those. And then my book, The Unicorn Has One Horn, my other nephew did the drawings. And he did his as watercolors and not on the computer. So that right there is a black-footed ferret, is an agile fellow. But on Sunday afternoon, he's slow and mellow. So Frank did all these pictures. Frank Henderson, my other nephew. And I think he's really talented. Frank is a funny kid, because what he does is he travels the world. He's never really had a career or a job.
No?
Worked for him. He's probably in his 30s now, yeah. But
wow.
He'll do like murals or art installations all over the world. And I was happy to have him. You know, I paid him to illustrate the book, and that's been a few years ago, not that long ago. But yeah, he's a great kid.
But how's he doing?
He's doing fine. He's in Spain right now. I don't know why. He's working on a mural, so.
Oh, wow. That's what I can't wait. So I have my book, which it's called A Journey of a Sapphire.
Okay.
And Journey of a Sapphire is about a girl who was on her journey towards success and come to face with some challenges and obstacles. So she was taken off that journey and really faced death.
Right.
But she overcame those challenges and obstacles.
Exactly. Well, one thing that happened to me early in my career is I got fired a lot. And when it happens the first couple times, you're so devastated. And then you just come to realize that's the business that I'm in. Everybody gets fired. You know, we've all gotten fired. Most of us. I mean, there's a few, you know, Steven Spielbergs or whatever that everybody goes after. But for the most of us, either we fit or we don't. And if we don't fit, they fire us and we find somewhere where we fit. So I can relate.
Absolutely. We have to learn how to take those punches.
Yes.
But I have to admit, now, I was a young entrepreneur and I never experienced the kind of challenges that I was faced with. So it rattled me because
yes.
I didn't know how to handle it. And the worst thing was I didn't have my mother or my father. So when you don't have anyone where you can really confide in to help you navigate.
That's very hard.
It's very hard, right?
And I was lucky in that I got married before I actually went back to film school. And so I've had my wife with me the whole way. So that was lucky for us. And it really helped me out because she was able to hold on a job to get health insurance and like that. And so I could actually bounce around as a freelancer, which I don't know if I would have been able to do without her. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. See, so I think by me being very spiritual.
Yes.
And I have taken care of myself very well, you know, growing up and everything. I think that really helped me to identify with some of the issues and the challenges that I was being faced with. And it really taught me how to navigate strategically. And I
right.
really became a lot stronger.
Yes.
And look at me now, right?
That's right. Well, Nisha said, that which does not kill us only makes us stronger.
That's right.
That's so true.
That is so true. So true. And I started on my second book.
Okay.
But I keep getting stuck. And I think one reason that I get stuck is because I'm a woman that wears a lot of hats.
Right. And so you're distracted.
Yeah, I get distracted. So, and I say, okay, I'm going to get back to the book because the book is very important because it's all about from the challenges and the obstacles to the journey and the destination, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So give me some points on how I can navigate all this again.
Again, I'm going to quote from some figures. Stephen King said, the art of writing is the art of applying the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair. So that's one thing. And then Winston Churchill said, the work of the world is done by people who don't feel very well.
Yeah.
So the thing is, you have to do is every day you just have to press on and press on and press on. And if you get stuck, go for a walk, meditate on some lemon blossoms, watch a sunset. And that's the kind of thing that always helps me is to get outside and see the world.
Yeah, that is true. So like today is a really calm day. And
okay.
I am going to get to my book because that's very important for me. This is for 2026. It has to come out in 2026. I have a lot more to share.
That's good.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to do. You got to say, I'm going to get this done by, I don't know, end of January, end of February, whatever you said. And then just make sure you keep working towards that goal. Even if you don't hit it, at least you're working towards it.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Mr. Austin, you said that you love learning odd facts about interesting animals.
Yes.
Now, we know we did discuss a little bit earlier, but then sharing what you discover, and I found that to be very interesting. And you take your curiosity and let it guide the books
Yes.
that you create for young minds. Please explain about the creativeness, because I thought that was very creative. I like the way that you geared yourself to know how to discover and share.
Well, one thing that's really helped me is being a parent and a grandparent. Because, you know, at my age, I don't remember a lot about being a small child, but because I have grandkids, I have one that's 5, one that's 13, and one that's maybe 6 months old. And I try to kind of see the world through their eyes when I write the poems. And like I said, my first book was mostly about cows and gorillas and all those kind of animals that kids are familiar with. But then once I started to get into it, I realized, holy cow, there's 20,000, 30,000 different species of mammals that you've never even heard of. Like there's, you know, like I said, there's those tiny little frogs that live only in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And like that. And so I always try to find different animals that maybe the kids have never heard of so that they will get curious about it and realize, you know, how huge the world is. It's not just your little community in Littleton, Colorado or whatever. There's people in Australia, there's people in Tierra del Fuego, Cape of Good Hope in South Africa, and they all have different experiences and different animals. So it's yeah. Fun to see that.
Absolutely. I do agree, because my student from Australia, they tell me about certain little bugs, because, you know, I have to admit, I'm scared of bugs. And they're all like, Pamela, you scared of that little bug. Well, you couldn't come to Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing. When my brother was 16, my mom got a job in Australia for the Australian Outward Bound School. And she took him with her, and he never came home. And so now he's, I don't know, 59 or something. And he lives in Tasmania, which is the farthest south as you can get before you get to Antarctica. And that's what I told him. Why don't you just get it over with and just move to Antarctica?
Yeah. So I'm like, really?
Yeah.
When they tell me about these bugs and spiders and, you know, Australia, it's the down under, correct?
It is, yeah. And they have a thing there called a huntsman spider, which is 18 inches across, but benign. It won't even bite you. It's scared of you. But just to see it, I'm sure you would see it and go, oh my God, let me out of here.
Yes.
A huntsman spider. I'll have to write a poem about that one.
Right. Have you been to Australia?
I have been twice, and we're going to go back next year probably. It's kind of different because they drive on the wrong side of the road, so it takes them getting used to. And all the crosswalks, they say, be sure to look left, because most of us Americans will look right, but the cars are coming from the left. So that is the thing about
that's
it.
That's what I hear. So have you been to, like, the Amazon or...
Well, we're on Amazon, Walmart.com, Barnes and Noble.
No, not the sites.
Oh.
The Amazon itself.
No, I've never been to South America, but I definitely want to go.
Okay.
I'd like to go to Mexico City for a month or two and just immerse myself in Spanish, and then I could learn Spanish better. I did pretty good. I did 2 years at the community college, but I could stand to learn some. It's hard for me to hear it. I can speak it, but it's very hard to understand it.
Yeah, but you got your Google Translator.
Yes.
So
well, that's the thing,
like
right? You don't have to, you really don't have to learn languages anymore. You can just talk into the translator and it'll translate whatever you say and translate it back to you, which that's really good, I guess, in a way, but in a way it's kind of, you know, you can have the airplanes, but then you have to give something up. The clouds will smell of gasoline. And like that, so it's all trade off, right?
It is true, and that is true. It's better try to learn, but I tell you, my students from Italy,
yes,
they try to teach me their language. No, Italy language is really hard. It's not easy.
It is. I know. I've been to Italy a couple times, and actually, I'm going next year for the Tour of Italy, which is a bicycle race. Bicycle racing in Europe is like football over here. They're all superstars.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
So I need to pick up a little Italian for that. But like I said, I'll mostly just use Google Translate because, let's face it, I'm not a polyglot.
Right. You got You just have to be ready. You got
Yeah.
to be ready. I want to visit Italy as well. I'm looking forward to visiting Italy and going to surprise my student from
Yeah.
Georgia.
The food over there is just phenomenal too. Because I went to France a couple of years ago, and the food, it's just amazing. I guess they've been at it for, what, 2,500 years, so they're pretty good at it by now.
Absolutely. So getting back to Hollywood,
Okay.
where you worked decades, right?
Yes.
And I understand you, we discussed you're a television producer and everything, but besides reality shows, you did movies like Terminator 2.
Yes. When I first started out in my career, that was in the 80s and 90s, I worked on lighting and grip. And it was fine, but I didn't. As I did it more and more, I realized that, nothing on a movie set weighs less than about 50 or 60 or 70 pounds for the lights or the cables or the electrical boxes or the generators and stuff. And I kind of got into management, but then I realized that the producers were the ones that just told everybody what to do and didn't have to do all the hard work. So I thought, well, I'm going to be a producer. But those movies were a very formative part of my early years in the business, and I'm proud to have worked on them.
So really, you are so knowledgeable and experienced. You can create you like a little documentary, can't you?
I could do documentaries, and I've worked on quite a few of them over the years. Like I said, once you get over the initial kind of hump of taking all the low wage, low rent, grunt jobs, and move up in management, you get to kind of pick and choose what you do. I did a documentary about nuclear weapons in the 90s, I think. And so that was fun. And then I did a show called Celebrate the Century for a guy named Bob Gannett, who worked for a guy named David Wolper. And what it was David has this phenomenal film library starting in the early part of the century, in the teens and 20s, when they had silent films, and all the way through to the end of the through to 1999. And so part of my job was I just had to watch tape all day every day of all these incredible tapes of the history of the 20th century. That was a really a fun job. And we did one also called Legends, Icons, and Superstars of the 20th Century, which is where we just did stories about people. I think we did Michael Jackson, we did Oprah, we did Gershwin, which was an early composer in the 30s and 40s, I think. We did that kind of stuff, and that was really fun too. So yes, I have documentary experience.
You do. Wow. A jack of all trades there,
I
man.
guess I was, yeah. And I like I said, I had a great career. I did well. I'm very happy where I'm at now. I'm glad to be retired. And just not having to. One thing that my wife and I both decided when we re retired was we were not going to do anything that required us to be somewhere to do a specific function on a specific date at a specific time. And of course, there's stuff we do that are like that, but for the most part, we try to avoid work. We just want to have fun.
I would. So tell me what's on your bucket list now? You have
We're
one?
going to do a lot of traveling over the next 3 or 4 years. I had some health issues over the past couple 3 years that I couldn't really get around, but now I'm over it. So
Oh, good.
we're gonna, like I said, we're going to Italy. We're gonna go to Australia, South America. I want to go to Hong Kong, but my wife doesn't, so we'll see how that works out. She'll probably
I
get
do
what she
too.
wants.
I want to go to Hong Kong too.
It just sounds fascinating. It's such a crossroads of the world. Hong Kong is, we're east meets west,
A
and
very innovative country.
yes, and technology there is just, and the film industry there is huge too. And I'd love to see some of that. So we'll see what happens.
I'm very proud of you. I'm
Oh,
glad
thanks. I
I
don't
have a celebrity on my show.
know about that, but sure, why not?
Yes, you are a celebrity. So my question to you would be, which I ask all of us whom are advocates of something, what advice would you give another aspiring up-and-coming producer?
Don't take every job that comes along, but stay busy. Don't spend a lot of time out of the industry because things move so fast, and people, if you're not there working all the time, and your name isn't prominent, people will forget about you in months. So you want to always stay busy, and always remember that no matter how hard the job gets, the show is going to end. And if you can make it through to the end, you get the respect of all the people that you work with, because so many people just quit halfway through. And just a funny little story about early in my career, I would come into shows where people had quit halfway through, and I'd think, why do people quit these jobs? It's so easy. And then when I got a show of my own from start to finish, I go, oh, now I see why. These things are so hard to start up. It just kills you. And if you can get through the startup and get to the part where you're, you know, going down to the last 4 or 5 months or 4 months of post-production, it's much easier. And like I said, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. No matter how hard it gets, the people that you're in the trenches with will remember you for the next job.
Beautiful. Well stated. Well, we are up for time.
Okay.
And tell us, how can someone contact you and purchase books?
I have a website called rustyaustin.com. Or you can just search Rusty Austin on, like I said, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. There's a bookseller called Ingram Spark, which can order any of my books if they're not in the bookstore. I'm not in many bookstores. I have had some stuff in Barnes & Noble, but we're working on that with my publicist to try to get more bookstores gone.
Yeah.
But right now it's mostly online. And right. It's rustyaustin.com.
I like that. Well, readers, I have reached my destination.
Thank you.
And I leave you with this quote. There were no new ways to understand the world, only new days to set our understanding against.
That's beautiful.
David Berman, until next time.
And thanks for having me on.
Have a wonderful day.
Yes.
God bless. Cheers.
Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.